We'll go ahead and invite everybody to come on in and find your seats and get it warmed up. Hope you get comfortable. I want to get started off tonight by two things. And look over. Not sure if I see them tonight. But so here's one of the flyers that I have about the Crown Financial class that we have some teachers doing. So I kind of beat around the bush a little bit about it for a couple of times, and so I'm going to do it again. I don't know if there's still slots available, but anyways, if there are, this is a flyer about it. The class is called Managing Money God's Way, and the description on it's: this Bible-based small group study is open to all adults in the church, young or old, single or married. And there's even a testimony from one of our members about the impact it made. So I did want to highlight that. It's important, and we all have finances, so don't kid yourself. And even if you're like me, where you've read every book you think you could read from all the most helpful gurus, having a small group to be able to talk about things that are real life happening to you can be encouraging also. Then the second one. So these are all things that come up while I've been teaching the class. The second one's a track that Tyrone Minear made up, I think he said 30 years ago. Maybe it was 40, 30 years ago at least. And it's just called Bible Talk. And basically it's a step-by-step Bible study. And it kind of leads you to the promised land, which is understanding the gospel. And so I did want to highlight those two things. Tyrone told me that he's got an unlimited supply on demand. So if you're interested in these, you can talk to Tyrone about them. And I did want to share those. So I do that to highlight the great feedback that I've received while teaching. And I don't mean great feedback because it's always pat on the back type feedback. I mean it's great because folks are engaging in the class, they're talking about it, they're giving me feedback, they're expressing ways that they've thought about what we've talked about, and to me that's great. And it's led me to some additions to tonight's class. And I just want to say thank you for that. I appreciate everybody's sincerity and honesty and looking at God's Word and how it can apply to our lives. In our last lesson, we spoke at length about talent. We discussed reflecting on things we're good at. And hopefully over the course of this past week, you've thought a little bit more closely about it. We asked ourselves to consider those things and how those things that we're good at, how we can use them to glorify God. And unfortunately, we only have so much time for a given subject. We only have so much time in a class. And the more I do this, the more I learn. And you know, I would assume you do as well. Ken talks about how a class turns into longer than he plans, or he needs to tidy up some things on Sunday night. And it's completely understandable because there's so much good stuff to talk about when it comes to studying the Bible. So what it means, though, is that there are numerous aspects of talent we didn't get the opportunity to reflect upon. And I used to believe that I had to squeeze everything that I knew on a particular subject into one time. And I had somebody where I was speaking at the time come pull me aside and say, David, you don't have to prove or demonstrate everything you know about a subject in one lesson. And you're kind of overwhelming me and others with some of your information. So I've tried to take that to heart. And I don't want to overwhelm anybody, but I don't want you to be distraught if you felt like there might be some aspects that I've left out. It's intentional. And anyways, I don't know everything to begin with. So it's my hope that our conversations and study time have caused you to think and act. If all I do is talk and engage and allow you to think, that's good because I think it does some important things in your heart and in your mind. But the other side of this is acting. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. So with that in mind, I'd like us to discuss talent from this standpoint, that of action. So our life can be filled with passion. It can be filled with purpose. It can be thought-provoking and refocusing on Christ. But it really means taking action. A book on my to-read list. So I don't know if any of you are avid readers. I've talked about it several times. So I try to find a delicate balance because what I've noticed in the past is sometimes I'll read and read and read stuff that's not my Bible. And so I try to find a balance of consuming both and not sacrificing my personal Bible study time. But one that's on my list is a book called Talent is Never Enough by John Maxwell. And some of you may have read that, but the title is catchy to me because it's my belief that you can have all the talent in the world and it makes no difference. It makes no difference if you don't do anything. I'm going to mention two names. And one is a guy by the name of Ryan Leaf, and another is a guy by the name of Sam Bowie. And there are others that have been recognized as big, major busts in professional drafts. Those two guys are two of the biggest draft busts in the history of sports. Recently, Ryan Leaf was arrested, and he was drafted to play quarterback for the Chargers and had some different issues come up, but long story short, he didn't fulfill the potential that the team thought he would have. And then Sam Bowie is known as the guy that was drafted ahead of Michael Jordan that never really played any basketball. And his career was ended due to injury. So all of that time, both had clear and obvious talent, and talent that was demonstrated to everybody. Folks could see the skills and the capacity that these two individuals had. And in many ways, there's a lot of other folks out there like that. But they needed more than talent. Talent requires our action to realize our potential energy. I'm not a science teacher. I'm not going to pretend to be a science teacher. But whenever I said potential energy, I thought of science class. And the illustrations I want to make are these. Think about electricity. I know I got an electrician in the crowd, so I don't want to get too technical there either because I'm not an expert electrician. But electricity to me means nothing if it's never released. We can have all the power that we would like within electricity, but if it's never released, it's always stored. So for instance, whenever we come into a room, we can have electricity running to a light switch, but if the switch is never thrown, we will never see that energy released in our lives. We'll never see that potential energy that's stored, that's just waiting to be put out there, that's waiting to be utilized. We'll never get to see it stored and released if we never flip the switch. I work for a Shell Oil Company, and we're in the oil business, right? It's in the name. And actually, right? So, real thought-provoking stuff here. But What value is there in oil? Anybody want to tell me how valuable oil is? Somebody's in commodities? Real valuable. All right. So, you know, for a long time, we were like, oh my goodness, oil is $115 a barrel, blah, 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 right? Gas prices, X, Y, or Z. Well, really, there's no value in oil if we never make any products out of it. If we never do anything with oil, it's worthless if it's not refined into valuable goods. In fact, you can pay whatever you want to pay for it, but if we don't have refineries heating that oil and pressurizing it and distributing it across pipelines to other places that can do really cool stuff with it, it doesn't matter. It's just black stuff that's worthless in the ground. Zig Ziglar famously, and you're going to get tired of me saying that, but I have a set of CDs in my car, and I probably listened to that book, a favorite book of mine, probably 4 times on CD. And but anyways, there's a statement that he made that I have listened to, and it always made me nervous in the past to think about things like this, but it was, you don't have to be great to start, but you do have to start to become great. And whenever I graduated from college, I didn't find a job right away. I had my Bible degree and a minor in family studies, but nobody wanted to hire a 23-year-old preacher, not a youth minister, but a 23-year-old preacher. And so I took a job that I could get, which was minimum wage at Famous Footwear, and I sold shoes because that's what I had to do. But I didn't realize at the time that it didn't matter skill level, it didn't matter experience, that if I never started at something, that I would never be able to achieve greatness. And that makes me think about talent. And I want you to know right here, right now, that our talents mean absolutely nothing if they're not used. And I share that with you because for a while I did preach full-time, and then for a while I refused to speak in public, whether it was at work or whether it was at a church. I refused to speak in public for a little while. And even though I love it, and I'm really excited to do it, and I love the opportunity to do it, it's just something I guess I had to think about and realize that you're not always guaranteed options and opportunities. Talent means nothing if it's never used. And I want you to know that God will use those who are willing, regardless of your perceived talent level. It doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't matter your background. It doesn't matter your pedigree. It doesn't matter your family lineage. It doesn't matter what college you went to. It doesn't matter if you went to college. It doesn't matter if you graduated from junior high or high school. None of that matters if you're not willing to utilize what you've got. What I would like to do is we're going to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17. And we're going to do something that I think is pretty cool. We're going to read a story that everybody's familiar with. And the purpose of reading this story that everybody's familiar with, which is David and Goliath, is God does spectacularly amazing things. And these stories that we read about gripped and captivated me as a child. Even whenever I didn't really go to church, we would go to TSO Optical on our medical assistance. We would go to TSO Optical, and I would sit and wait to be seen because I've worn glasses since I was in first grade. And while waiting to be seen, they had these books on the coffee table that were all these really cool stories. And I read about Noah's flood, and I read about David and Goliath, and I read all these amazingly powerful stories. And I want you to read, as we read this story, we're not going to read the entire chapter, but as we read this, I want to ask you, what business does this little boy or this young man, or what business does the youngest child of this family have in approaching Goliath? All right, so we're going to start in verse 4. It says, a champion named Goliath, who is from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. He was over 9 feet tall. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor of bronze weighing 5,000 shekels. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. Goliath stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel. I'm not going to shout while I read this. Why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. If he's able to fight and kill me, we will become your subjects. But if I overcome him and kill him, you will become our subjects and serve us. Then the Philistine said, this day I defy the ranks of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. On hearing the Philistine words, Saul and all the Israelites were dismayed and terrified. I'm going to skip down. We'll read verse 16. For 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and evening and took his stand. Verse 22. David left his things with the keeper of supplies, ran to the battle lines, and greeted his brothers. As he was talking with them, Goliath, the Philistine champion from Gath, stepped out from his lines and shouted his usual defiance. And David heard it. When the Israelites saw the man, they all ran from him in great fear. Verse 26, David asked the men standing near him, "What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" And then, skipping down to verse 32, David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." But David, starting in verse 34, said to Saul, "Your servant's been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he's defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and of the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine." Skipping down in verse 41, "Meanwhile, the Philistine, with a shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was only a boy, ruddy and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, 'Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods." Verse 45, "David said to the Philistine, 'You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you've defied.'" Everybody knows the story, right? What happens next? One rock goes into the sling, and the sling goes round and round, round and round, and round and round, and knocks the giant down. And then the part of the song that we don't sing with our little ones, right? He picks up the sword, slices off its head, and it's got his victory. Man. What business did David have doing that? Anybody want to help me out? What business did he have? Any of it. Showing up, going out there, shooting his mouth off, taking action, not sitting back, but going out there and fighting the war.
Someone had to kill him.
Someone had to kill him. All right. Did it matter that David was young?
Not to him.
Where did David's strength come from? God? How is he able to have confidence? All right, his faith, but you know what? What experiences did he have to give him that faith and that confidence? All right, so somebody help me out. Anybody ever been in the wild near a bear? We got one, two, three, four. All right. How about a lion? One, two. Got a couple? I haven't ever encountered them. And I really don't want to. I like my snake-free, rat-free zone. It's comfortable to me. And you know what? I'm going to be real honest with you guys. I've never been deer hunting. I've never loaded a weapon and shot it to kill a deer. I've never skinned a deer. I don't know what you do. Thank you for doing that for me, but I can't imagine being confronted with that. And his faith and confidence was there because, guess what? His everyday life prepared him for that moment. Being a shepherd boy, helping out around the house, living his life, serving his family, prepared him for that moment. He was able to have confidence because he had experience in his world, right? I've seen some movies, and I've talked to folks that have encountered these things out in the wild and, you know, curl up in a ball and hope that it leaves you alone doesn't sound like a real good plan to me. His life experiences prepared him for that. And so he was able to approach that with confidence, knowing that God didn't let him get gobbled up and assaulted by the bear and the lion. He was able to overcome those. How many and who was around that failed to act? His brothers, everybody, the king himself. Oh boy. Trained men. Trained, lean, mean fighting machines. All scared. Now, for those of you that have served in combat, how you do what you do, how you did what you did, is an amazing service to me. And, you know, these folks were trained, prepared, and they failed to act. They were scared. And when I think about this, there are many times where I feel very fortunate that I'm not going to be called off by a king to fight a giant like this. And as I reflected on this and what I wanted to stir within you about talent is, you know, Satan, he's just as big and as intimidating as ever, laughing in our faces and antagonizing us that I'm out here defying God. Ha, ha, ha. I rule the airwaves. I rule the radio stations. I rule every aspect of your life. Ha, ha, ha. What are you going to do? You can't do anything. I rule it all. I'm in charge. That's the way I feel. He's there standing and trying to tower over me and intimidate me into fear and inaction. He wants to paralyze me on my deepest, innermost fears so that I won't do anything for God's glory. That's what Goliath was doing. He paralyzed them and immobilized them because of his stature, because of his height, his strength, his inherent no weakness. He just appeared stronger than what anybody could overcome. There were lots of folks that stood around and did nothing. Chelsea sent me a statement that I didn't write down. I wish I had now. I look at it every day. But the statement is that basically evil overtakes or overcomes the world when good men fail to act. And I suggest that's true. When good people fail to act, terrible, terrible, horrendous things happen. There were lots of folks around that failed to act, and this guy stood around for 40 days. Yes, Tyrone. You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that. I think I've shared, or maybe it was even an illustration that was shared here about crabs in a bucket or bringing down people better than you. And, you know, sometimes the places we least expect the criticism and the fear and telling us to stand down and watch are from sometimes the places we might least expect it. That's true in a lot of decisions. Has anybody ever made a decision where you felt it was in you or in your family's best interest to act a certain way or do a certain thing, and family said, That's dumb. Yes. I love reading these stories.
Don't you think that the shame that all these brothers had was tremendous? I mean, the whole army is ashamed of themselves. They're afraid of this guy. Then this little boy comes up, and he makes this rash statement, and they jump all over him because they're disgusted with themselves as well.
You know, you mentioned that, and in my mind, I've wondered back to the Revolutionary War and what folks had to go through to fight cousins and things like that, and what I've been willing to do and stand up for. And you know, folks may have felt shamed, but have you ever noticed sometimes it takes one person to just kind of put their foot out, test the water, or take some action, and then everything breaks loose and folks really take off after it? There are lots of folks around that fail to act. And guess what? There are lots of folks around today that fail to act. I mean, how many times do we get frustrated by stuff that we see and we're thinking, man, why didn't they act? Why didn't they do something? Why didn't they go take care of it? Why didn't they handle it? If I were there, I would have done X. Well, guess what? You're right in the middle of it. Side by side, we're moving on. And we're involved, and every single day we are challenged. And in my opinion, much the same way that this Philistine defiled the armies of God and cursed this boy, that Satan and all the folks that are ungodly do the same thing to us every day. What does God look at when he evaluates us? Sure.
You know, the statement that David made really has a message. When he said, "Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that defies the armies of God?" He said, "Here's an ungodly rascal that stands up against the armies of God." That's his hope. That's his hope. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. There used to be a song that we would sing at church camp sometimes called "Whose Side Are You Leaning On?" And I'm leaning on God's side, and I'm bouncing, and I'm jumping, or whatever. God is on our side. Signed, sealed, delivered. But that's not what we're told every day.
We've let uncircumcised Philistines in this country
control the dialogue. Now, I don't want to take off, but we got a long story. It's not, there's a lot of work we need to do in our homes, and I don't want to get off on that particular subject, but we got a lot of roles and responsibilities we need to handle in-house, and some of those things might be related to that. I want us to look at 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. This answers the question that I asked that I believe most folks know. Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things that man looks at. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And one of the things that I love is we see this here written down. And then you can turn over into Psalms and you can read Psalm 51, where David talks about that God doesn't want sacrifice. He wants a broken and contrite heart. And then he can move over to the New Testament and similar sentiments asked about, well, who are you and what were you before you were Christians? How many of you were anybody or anything? I want to stress and impress upon our hearts and our minds that God is preparing you and has been preparing you for totally awesome greatness. Totally awesome greatness. He's preparing you for action. He's not preparing you to stand by and watch idly. He's not interested in all of your life experiences amounting to nothing. He's preparing you and has prepared you for action. The challenge is to go forward with strength and courage. Now, I've got an assignment for you to look at your life, no matter what stage of life you're in right now, to look at your life. And if you can't find one way that God has worked in your life for His glory and His honor that you can use to serve people, you come find me and we'll talk about your life and we'll find one. Because I guarantee you there's one aspect of your life, and most folks say it's three you could do every day, that we can find something that God has purposely worked within your life to help you serve other people. Yes, in the back. So you touched on a couple of things for me, Dan, and I appreciate it, because the direction we're heading is, I'm challenging you to volunteer. That's it. I'm asking you to get involved. Volunteer. Go forward with strength. It's okay to get hurt. It's okay to not be invited. Volunteer. Get your hands dirty. Roll up your sleeves. Spend your time, spend your money, spend your energy. Get involved. And the reason I feel strongly about this is nobody said, hey, David, come up here to the front lines. We got the best job in the house for you. Come on, right up front. And you get the job of going up before Goliath. Come on. How many folks... No, we said, they said, no, you're not allowed. Get back, go home, you did your job, get out of here. And you may face that same experience. So I'm asking you to volunteer. I've got three things that I'm asking you to do. All right? If you're not involved with serving, serve. If you're serving, you're already involved in serving. David, I serve. I serve really, really hard. Great. I'm glad, and sincerely, I really do appreciate that, because not everybody is comfortable putting themselves out in front of everyone. If you're serving, look at who you can get more involved in serving. If you're actively serving, whether you're serving and glorifying God in this congregation or you're out in the community and you're involved in some other way and you're glorifying God through that, whether it's, I think some folks go to the PACN, or you're doing an orphanage, or whatever it is, look at getting others more involved. Sometimes we get a little bit comfortable looking around those and seeing folks, well, the program's good, and so folks are already involved. My job's done. I'm serving, they're serving, everything is going okay. But we should look at helping others get involved. And third, all right, if you're serving and you're inviting, maybe you can teach or encourage others on how they do that. How do I get involved? Hey, I don't know what's out there. Or, you know what? Man, David, I see you doing this. How do you do it? Maybe you can just teach or encourage others to serve. This is how I serve. This is what I do. I got two illustrations about this. One is, you know, there's some things that Chelsea and I are involved here at the congregation, and one of them's during the summertime. And we just said, hey, we'd like to do it. Okay, go do it. And there are other things where it's, hey, we're not having a lot of involvement here. Would you help out? Are you interested? Or, hey, we're really interested. Can we be involved? Sometimes the path may seem clear. Something's very well established. Sometimes it may not be. Maybe it's just, you know, there's a, as you get older, you have little kids, you watch movies. Robots. See a need, fill a need. How many needs are out there? Anybody want to guess? One need? Two, three, four, five. Limitless. Limitless need lives out in the world. All right. Action. Regardless of your talent, if you are not acting and you're not involved, figure out a way to do it. Choose to be involved. Choose to serve. If you're serving, look at getting others more involved in serving. And if you're good at that, help others become good at it. These are, you know, the class on this and the Bible tract that showed from Tyrone. And nobody's saying, hey, go do this, figure it out. That's an open invitation. That's an open opportunity. Somebody just said, you know what, I think I would like to do that more. And the same can be for you. Sincerely appreciate the opportunity to share that with you. I really believe that deep inside our hearts, we have a sincere desire to serve God. And every day we go out and we stare up at a 9-foot giant. Throw him off your chest, throw him off your throat, and let's get after it because God's on our side. Thank you.